December of 1941, the Second World War had officially spilled across the Pacific and reached the U.S. Following the surprise attack on Pearl Harbor, the citizens of the U.S. were set on edge by the fear of a Japanese attack on the west coast of the U.S. mainland. Some would say that that fear was affirmed when a secret Japanese submarine surfaced and fired on the city of Elwood, California, on February 23, 1942. The very next night, the residents of Los Angeles were witness to what, some would say, was the first ever engagement of a UFO by human military forces. Following a night filled with air raid sirens, spotlights sweeping the night sky, and anti-aircraft fire from American ground forces, the U.S. military was at a loss as to what had truly been seen that night. Two official reports were released. One implied that it was an enemy spy plane, the other claiming it was a weather balloon. Multiple witnesses reported that something had been caught in the spotlights above LA that night. Something that had seemed unaffected as it weathered the formidable nighttime barrage. This case file, the theorists looked to the skies over La La Land for the Battle of LA.
Welcome to Alien Theorists Theorizing, Case File 92, Battle of L.A.
Woo. I'm Braden.
I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
Holy shit, we did it! 92 episodes, we did it! All names,
we finally
intro.
Got it!
It only took one member not being here.
The right case file number.
Three is the perfect. Three is the number. It's a sacred number. Triangle, three sides. Yeah, I don't know. Can't see me, but. Yeah.
Life will find a way, I guess, right? I guess if you're listening to this, we're back from Vegas. Even though when we're recording this, we haven't gone yet, but
we had a really great time.
Yeah, I'm sure we did.
Yeah, I'm sure our future selves have just an awesome time, or we don't come back.
We are in a cell in Area 51.
Yeah,
sitting there.
Yeah.
So if this podcast has stopped transmitting, we're done.
If we don't come back from Area 51, so
it's over.
Show was over. It's been a good ride.
Also, some plugs at the beginning of the show, a little mix things up. If you're not already on our Patreon, get on it. We've got tons of good stuff on there. We almost got an entirely second podcast on there now.
Starting.
Yeah. ATT Confidential is for our Patreon only. There's some really good ones coming out that me and Dan were really happy with. So we ventured down some Cold War conspiracies. We talk about the human pickler. We do some D&D on there. There's tons of stuff. So get on our Patreon. Get all that stuff. You're missing out.
Why not?
Also, go buy some merch from TeePublic. We got a bunch of shirts on there. Just uploaded a new shirt. You down with ATT? So if you're down with ATT, I got some I'm down with ATT. Can you probe me shirts? So go ahead and get those. Also, what was the other thing I was going to do? T-shirts. Give us some 5-star reviews. You know, we don't ask for much other than Patreon, you know, buy your t-shirts. Some 5-star reviews, but.
Well, TeePublic's got more than t-shirts. They got stickers. They got mugs. They got all kinds of stuff. So if you want to have some ATT with your morning coffee, that rhymes. Yeah. You know, that'd be cool.
Ooh, maybe I'll make some Cafe Conspiracy mugs.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
That is a good idea. Why don't we, anyone else, let's get some space news! Space news out of nowhere there. I got a little bit here today. Saturn's biggest moon, Titan, may bake its own atmosphere.
Tasty.
Yeah. So Titan fascinates scientists because of its thick atmosphere, which is mostly made of nitrogen gas. And its liquid methane and ethane oceans, its atmosphere is thicker than Earth's. And it's the only other solar system body with large amounts of liquid on its surface. So basically, what they're thinking is that organic material is essentially being baked. It's being cooked. And it's making the, it's steaming up the atmosphere. That's why it's...
The bread people of Titan.
Yeah. So yeasty. The yeast people. But, so they're thinking that organic material is coming from comets and stuff. And it's getting baked in their poison oceans and shit. And yeah, that's what caused it. But there's some I've seen some pictures now of like... From when Cassini, I highly recommend, check out Cassini's Titan flybys. Incredible. Stunning photos. What else do I got here? Anyone else before I jump into something else here?
Chinese companies OneSpace and iSpace are preparing for their first orbital launch. We talked about it before. They're the next two private space companies to reach low Earth orbit, both from China. And they're pretty much putting up a 19-meter tall four-stage rocket able to carry 205 kilograms payload to LEO. So not a lot, but...
ELO?
LEO.
Don't let me down. Bah, bah, bah.
So more companies up there making it cheaper.
Is it OneSpace and iSpace?
Yep, two separate companies.
I think they probably stole each other's names. Like, oh, they're OneSpace. They took ours. Yeah. Just put I there.
Those,
just change
those
it.
Assholes,
just
ours wasn't one. Well, we'll just call it iSpace now. NASA has a new plan to revive the Mars rover Opportunity as time runs short. NASA.
Space drama.
Basically, so the Opportunity rover, they haven't heard of it. Heard from it since June 10th when there was a global dust storm on Mars. They figure that the dust has covered its solar arrays, so it's not powering up. But NASA has developed new, more powerful collection of commands to try to force the long silent Opportunity rover to resume operations. Over the past 7 months, they've tried to contact the rover 600 times. But they haven't heard back yet, and the probability that they will it decreases every day. So they're really hoping to get a good sweep and beep out of it.
Maybe it's ghosting them.
Yeah, it's just like,
give it up. Give it up, NASA. Don't want to see you no more.
Yeah.
That motherfucker's gone.
Yeah, 100%.
I found a new man.
He's gone.
Married. It's not going to send a signal till Elon gets up there and wipes it off. done. What else do I have here?
More space news?
Yeah, I got a little bit. There is a huge geomagnetic storm.
Which means
auroras.
Woo!
And it's gonna be for the next little while. So by the time you've heard this, you've probably missed all of them.
Oh, so you're really bringing it back to old days where you give days. Space news that is not relevant at all.
Everybody loves nostalgia.
Yeah, bring it back. Maybe I'll get some pictures of it because it's going to happen in the next 5 days. So, but yeah, if you want some aurora alerts, some real ones, go to spaceweather.com. You can type Google aurora alerts, get them sent to your phone. I would only recommend doing that if you're in areas where you can see them, because or else you're just being teased all the time.
Maybe you just want to know when they're happening.
Yeah, that's true. The other isn't really space news, but it's. I'll just say it anyways. CIA uploads millions of classified documents to its website, including information on UFOs and psychic powers.
Psychic powers. I went through some of those. I actually went through some of those. They had the Height 611 documents from the one that we did.
So this was just released?
Yeah.
Yeah.
January 18th.
Huge dump. Oh, cool.
Huge document dump. It's a whole bunch. I started going through some of them, but most of them are, I don't know. They had one about psychic powers, but it wasn't all that impressive. It was just kind of descriptions of stuff that they tried. And then I mean, there might be some gems in there. I don't know, but it would take a lot of people to go through all that information. But a lot of it is like non-substantial stuff. It's just like little emails and or not emails, but just like memos and stuff that just they're little communiques that don't really make any sense unless you knew what they were talking about. It's cool though. It's super new. I wonder if there's stuff in there though.
Interesting.
I got one other one. And in the absolute dumbest space news you could probably hear, a Japanese firm is creating space fireworks with artificial meteors.
How is that so dumb space news? That's amazing. Well, wait. Sounds great.
The small particles will be dropped from a microsatellite and burn up as they fall to Earth. This space entertainment could potentially be a disaster waiting to happen. What if they don't? What if you just have, you're like, holy shit, you just make a meteor shower of all these burning particles crushing people at festivals.
Way too small. Big. Yeah, well, way too small.
Are they like the size of cars?
I don't know. Hey, I don't know. We'll see.
Just flying space trash up and then just dropping it to burn it up.
They launched, the company launched its first satellite on board the Japanese Space Agency's JAXA Ellipson rocket on January 17th. So they're going to test it up. So, how often can you send them up there, though? You know what I mean? Like,
it doesn't seem like a very feasible substitution for fireworks. It's like a
sustainable idea.
Let me tell you.
Maybe once. Olympics.
I think that if this was Shark Tank, I'd pass. I think it's just the feasibility is too much. I'm out.
What's your valuation?
I don't know, but it's. I don't think it's worth it.
Definitely not.
Because I'm seeing a picture of what they hope it looks like, and I'm like, no, that's not what it's going to look like. Because those are big meteors that come through that look like that. Like, I just don't think it's going to happen.
That sucks. Just more space trash in the sky for people to get excited about when you think it's a UFO. It's just Japanese space fireworks.
Some more Japanese space trash. All right, what... Oh, sorry. You want to fire up the randomatron here?
Yes, I do. And we're thinking at it right now.
Fan submission.
All right, this one, this is a fan submission from Jake. Should I drop his last name? His last name's on this, but I...
Nah, he'll recognize
Jake,
us.
Jake, you know who you're on.
Yeah.
You know who you are. Hey, guys, writing to you from the beautiful Great Falls, Montana, home to one of the most famous UFO encounters in the country. A UFO that caused shutdowns of U.S. intercontinental ballistic missile sites during the Cold War. Hashtag look it up. What is it? Give me a... What am I supposed to look up? Just Montana UFO? Probably. It'd probably work, but... First off, awesome show. I've listened to everyone. I especially love anything government conspiracy. The Pizzagate episode was mind-blowing. I wanted to tell you about an experience I had working in the Midwest a few years back, just in case you wanted to do one of your listener call-in shows. I work for a large grain company in their country grain elevator group. I traveled around every few years being asked to run different rail-loaded terminals across the Midwest. In 2013, I was asked to move to Southwest Wisconsin to run a large rail terminal. To set the stage, this facility sits right off the Wisconsin River in a large clearing. Basically, a large grain elevator with a large field surrounding the back half of the property. At the edge of this field is a thick timber, probably 100 yards from the closest part of the elevator. I transferred to the facility to replace a retiring manager who had been there since the place was first built. She was a very nice older lady and was very interested in the history of the Native Americans in the area. She told me that the grounds of the elevator were haunted because they had been built on some kind of Native American prayer ground.
Ooh.
She had gone as far as having a Native American medicine woman come out and bless the property and wander around with burning sage. Not being a real believer in ghosts and whatnot, I wrote this off as someone simply imagining things. It was not until a few months later that things started to get weird. It was during harvest, so we were running longer hours, particularly later into the evening. I had multiple employees report that right around dusk, they would get whiffs of a pipe smoke in the breeze. Being a grain elevator, due to the flammable nature of the grain dust, we are extremely sensitive to smoke and fire. On some of these reports, the smell would be so strong that we would shut down the operation to search for fire. On another instance, one of the office employees working after dark, with the windows open, said she heard chanting and music. She assumed it was me trying to scare her. Not only did I have nothing to do with the sound, but I did not hear it. Events like this went on and off for the duration of harvest, ultimately stopping when we hit winter because we would close around 4 in the afternoon. This, however, was only the beginning of the encounters. In the spring, we began an expansion project that would double the size of the plant. This involved disturbing more land around the current footprint of the building. At any given time, we had around 15 construction workers working in the plant 18 hours a day. These guys are welders, millwrights, ironworkers, etc. Pretty burly dudes that don't get scared easily. From the beginning of the project, we fought all kinds of issues, always happening right at sunset. I had a millwright tell me that when he was bent over a piece of equipment with a grinder prepping a weld, when out of nowhere the grinder sparked, shorted out, and quit. As he started to pick his head up, he saw 2 feet traditional ornate moccasins standing right in front of him. It startled him, so he flipped his face shield off quickly and stood up. Nobody was there, and there was just a dead tool. So the welding piece. On another occasion, a welder was welding and his rod exploded mid-weld. This is not totally unheard of, but for an experienced welder taking care of his equipment, it's pretty rare. When this rod popped, he looked up with his welding hood still down and clearly saw a silhouette of a fully adorned Native American chief standing arms folded, between 2 grain bins about 20 yards away. When he lifted the hood, the figure was gone. After this, the men would report seeing fleeting sightings of the same figure walking around at dusk. As soon as sunset hit, things would fall, tip over, quit working, and break. Nuts and bolts would fall 150 feet from platforms where no one was working, always right at dusk and with the same figure present. After about a week of this, the guys were very shooken up. Most guys would try to take breaks and leave around sunset and only return after nightfall. A few weeks into the project, I was working in my office right around dusk, still not having experienced any of this firsthand, when the entire crew hastily jumped in their vehicles and took off. No cleanup, no signing out, just bolted. As I sat there trying to figure out what happened, originally thinking there was some kind of accident or emergency, I heard a distant drumbeat, a steady, low drumbeat, and began to smell a faint but distinct scent of tobacco. I jumped in my car and made a quick pass through the elevator. Didn't see anything and headed home. In the morning, I was confronted by the foreman who informed me that they would not be working past dusk any longer. He told me that the men had all heard the drumbeat that the evening before and looked out to see the edge of the timber line with hundreds of Native American warriors. The chief, seen so many times before, standing halfway between the line of warriors and the plant, arms open wide. Unlike the earlier sightings, these figures did not disappear. They stood there, unflinching, until the workers cleared out. A few guys tried to snap pictures, but none of the Native Americans appeared. From that point forward, construction only took place during the day with no more issues, but for years later, we still have issues in the plant at sunset. Usually things like equipment unexpectedly shutting down or alarms sounding with nothing wrong. It was quite an experience and has left me a believer. Take it easy, boys. Keep up the good work, Jake. Thanks, Jake. Oh, it's creepy.
Ghost, man. Fucking ghost.
That's why you don't mess around with those Indian prayer grounds.
Yeah, or like any kind of Native American burial ground. That's like the first rule of any horror movie.
Yeah. Anywhere where a bunch of dead people have like either died or been buried never seems to be a good spot.
I don't know. That's most of Rome. It's just built on top of something else.
Europe's just haunted.
Every city in Europe is haunted because it's all built on
Built on death and war. Top was
another city.
Well,
eat.
The battle over Los Angeles.
From Montana to L.A.
What is it?
So
just a blimp?
Let's go. Well, let's get into it. Let's take it back though before this incident. I kind of want to go some. So we're 3 months after Pearl Harbor, I believe.
Yes.
3 months after Pearl Harbor, so America's joined World War II. They're obviously rattled as a nation because of the Pearl Harbor attacks. On February 23rd, there was a Japanese Navy attack or a submarine attack off the coast. It fired mortars into an oil field, missed a bunch of stuff, like peppered some old sheds. I think it was like 12 or 14 shells they fired. Some of them were duds.
They barely hit anything. I think the total damages was like $500.
$500. But the Japanese, and this is all kind of plays into, we have to talk about this before we talk about the next day. So obviously the Americans are, alarms are raised right away. So they're out looking for the submarine. And meanwhile, the Japanese reported that they had like absolutely peppered the coastline, like
devastated.
Yeah, devastating destruction on the American coastline. When really it was like,
they like basically they said they won the war.
Yeah,
right there,
right then and there. I wanted to say that because obviously, you know, like the fucking states are at a heightened sense of alertness at that point, right? So
we're on high alert.
High alert. So let's move on to February 24th, 1942. Dan, you want to start us off?
So the Battle of LA is really the first case that you had where American forces or any military, any Earth military for that reason, actually engaged a UFO. So I guess I can give you a timeline of what it was. So the morning of, I mean, the night of and the morning, the night of February 24th, the night of February 25th or morning of 20, whatever we want to put it. At 1:44 in the morning on February 25th, radar in the vicinity of LA detected an object in the direction of Santa Maria. So that's about like, that's northeast from LA, I think northwest from LA. So at 2 a.m., they pick it back up. The target is within 120 miles of LA. So it's moving towards LA. And at this point, they've picked it up on three different radars. They've got two long range and like one short range to confirm that they do have something on the radar. At 2:06 to 2:27, the target is tracked to within 3 miles of LA. At 2:15, all the AA gun crews that have been put on alert, AA gun emplacements have been placed around the area because everybody was afraid of Japanese attacks. We had no real idea of what the Japanese were capable of. We weren't, we knew we weren't prepared, but it was the best thing they could think of was to set up all these watch stations and set up all these AA gun emplacements around the major cities. So they put all the AA gun crews on alert. They hadn't identified exactly what was heading in or what they had on radar. So they're all just keeping their eyes out. So at about 2:25, they ordered a red signal, a blackout. And
the air at that time too, the air raid sirens hit.
Right. So
that I could only imagine that'd be the fucking most terrifying thing ever. Like, you know what these things are. And all of a sudden you're like walking the streets and you're like, oh, we're fucked.
Yeah. They had been having drills. The people in the areas that were affected by the air raid drills or where they thought would be probable targets for a Japanese attack had been practicing these air raid drills, and they had been practicing for blackouts and things like that. So because if you have an enemy attacking from the air, you black out everything so they can't identify their targets, or at least it makes it a bit more difficult for them to find where the city center is or to orient where to drop their bombs. So at 2:25, whole city shut down. So, I mean, blackout is everything. That's all street lights, all, you know, house, everything, cities. You just shut everything
down. I'm assuming they do that because then it's hard for enemy to, like, locate, like, high-value targets.
Right, right, exactly. And then at 2:27, about 2 minutes later, they ordered radio silence. So there was no communication going on after that point. And then at 2:32, all AA gun crews got the green signal and they were ready to open fire.
Yeah, essentially what that means is, like, if they see something in the sky, fucking shoot it.
Right. And so with all the AA gun crews on high alert, observers first heard firing starting at about 3 a.m. and it continued until about 3:30. So you had gun crews expending, they said somewhere in the range of, I think, 1,400 to 1,450, somewhere in there.
I've heard anything as low as 1,300 and as high as 1,600 while doing the research for this. So
yeah, I would say somewhere in that range of rounds, but a lot. They shot a lot. 50 cals, 12-pound AA cannons, everything. They were throwing everything up there that they could at what they perceived as an object in the air. So after all this happened, they managed. There's a really famous picture. A lot of pictures were taken. A lot of news broadcasts were made. And they have the famous picture of an object which seems to be caught within the crosshairs of the lights in the Battle of LA. And that's the famous picture that you see when you look up the Battle of LA, you see it. And it seems to be some sort of object caught in the lights that they were using at the time.
Yeah, it's a crazy, it's a really cool looking picture.
Right. And so they threw everything that they could at this thing. And if there was something up there, it would have been shredded. Any plane of the day that would have been up there in the air probably would have just been blown to pieces. But even the CBS news broadcast that was reported the next day, they reported that they saw the shells hitting the object, but not necessarily doing any damage. So that's from there, the information that they put together for a news broadcast. And they said that some sort of unidentified object was being tracked by the U.S. Army as it flew over, flew and hovered at some points, or seemed to hover, was taking no damage from any of this, or didn't seem to be affected at all. Trajectory didn't really seem affected, nothing, not speed. It just went through the skies, took everything that the anti-aircraft batteries are firing at it, just kept going.
So this glowing UFO in searchlights just took about 1,400 shells, and there was no wreckage found of anything, right?
Right. They didn't find anything. The only stuff that people ended up picking off the ground were pieces of shrapnel and, like, some shells that fell from the air, because whatever goes up has to come down. So, I mean, they showed damage from, like, the shells and the shrapnel from the AA shells and rounds, like, caused damage in the city. And it probably actually caused more damage than the Japanese sub caused the couple days before. Because you saw people's had, like, holes in their cars, broken windows, all kinds of crazy.
And six people died.
Mm-hmm.
In the result, there were two heart attacks, a car accident, and then I can't remember how the other people died.
Nobody died from, like, the shrapnel, like, as a direct result of any of that stuff. But yeah, like Brayden said, there were... I think three car accidents, people trying to drive in a blackout, which is not a great idea. And then there were two heart attack victims that died just because of the stress of the air raids. And just, I can't imagine what it was like.
Oh my,
thinking that you're getting bombed.
So the same day, like later that morning, Secretary of Navy Frank Knox held a presser, a big press conference, and he stated there was this was a big false alarm. There was no aircrafts. It was just the whole case was, you know, it was a very expensive case of jittery nerves.
Mm-hmm. And then Secretary of War Henry Stimson said that, oh, we saw like 15 spy planes up there. That's what made us fire off all those rounds.
So Chief of Staff George Marshall wrote a memo to President Roosevelt, and the memorandum said this, and I quote, the following is the information we have from, I think it's bad quality, CHQ at this moment regarding the air alarms over Los Angeles of yesterday morning. From details available at this hour, 1, unidentified airplanes other than American Army or Navy planes were probably over Los Angeles and were fired on by elements of the 37th CA Brigade between 3:12 and 4:15 a.m. These units expended 1,430 rounds of ammunition. 2, as many as 15 airplanes may have been involved, flying at various speeds from what is officially reported as being very slow to as much as 200 miles per hour and at elevations from 9,000 to 18,000 feet. 3, no bombs were dropped. 4, no casualties among our troops. 5, no planes were shot down. 6, no American Array or Navy planes were in action. Investigation continuing. It seems reasonable to conclude that if unidentified airplanes were involved, they may have been from commercial sources, operated by enemy agents for the purpose of spreading alarm, disclosing location of anti-aircraft positions, and slowing production through blackout. Such conclusion is supported by varying speed of operation and the fact that no bombs were dropped. So that's Army Chief of Staff General George Marshall.
Wait. But there was no aircraft found. So if it was commercial aircraft being flown by some type of suicide pilot, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
No one got shot down.
There'd be wreckage. There'd be wreckage.
Yeah. Another important point that you take away from it is that the Army had no planes in the air at the time. They had made a decision at the time that when this thing was identified, you think they would scramble fighters or things like that. But they had assumed that if this were an attack, this would have been some sort of reconnaissance craft. And after the reconnaissance craft left, then they would send in the main force. So they decided that it would have been better to keep their air power back, keep all their planes on the ground until they knew exactly what was doing. Because if you had planes up in the air already, and then the main force showed up, your pilots would be half out of gas by the time they got there.
Well, and the other thing, in a blackout, and you have that much kind of artillery on the ground, I don't know if you would want your planes in the air too. You know what I mean?
Like, oh, yeah, true.
You kind of have to do one or the other. It's either you're sending your airplanes at their airplanes, but if it's a bombing run, they're probably going to be too late and your city's going to get peppered a bit. Or you're doing the anti-aircraft guns, but then you got to keep your fucking planes out of there.
Exactly. So there were no planes on the ground. There were no reports, no official reports of any military planes being up in the air at that time.
Hmm. So we got multiple different reports. At first, they think it was just one object, but then some reports saying it's up to 15.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts? How many were there? What do you think?
Well,
is it just one?
So basically, they come out and do a presser and they say, hey, like, you know what? Everyone calm down. We're a little on edge. We were just shooting at nothing, right? That's the official story. So then they start getting reports from thousands and thousands and thousands of people being like, but we saw something. We saw something in the sky. Like, we don't know what it is, but we saw something. So this forced the government to essentially change their story. And this is the first instant that the government uses weather balloons as an excuse. So then the official story changes that it was a weather balloon that they were firing at.
Yeah, but wasn't that years after that they said that?
I thought it was right after, pretty soon after.
Okay. Well, either way, yeah, I'm pretty sure it was the United States Coast Artillery Association identified it as a meteorological balloon. Got a little stone before the podcast, boys. But pretty much one balloon, the story changes to one balloon started all the firing. And then when you start, all the explosions started going off in the sky, people thought like that was enemy aircraft, so they're just firing at themselves pretty much is what the story changed to.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make any sense. If people are actually seeing stuff.
Let's go through the things now. So if it was a balloon, let me tell you something. That balloon would have been fucking destroyed.
Oh yeah.
Destroyed. There's no way it would have you wouldn't fire at a balloon for 45 minutes.
It would have dropped. And if you think like it would have been obliterated, not completely, but it's like that thing would have dropped pretty quick. The weather balloons they had back then were made of mostly, what was it? Like they're made of cotton with like a rubberized paint, like put on the outside. And if you have like red hot shrapnel pelting these weather balloons, they're not built for that kind of stuff. They would have went right through it and that thing would have sank. Like a rock, just and then it would have been sitting in somebody's front yard in their tree or something. Like they would have picked it
balloon.
Up.
Balloon, it's in the name.
Yeah, and even those weather balloons usually carried like radio transponders, right? They would have been able to go pick it up, and it went. Like I said, it would have ended up on somebody's house or on their car. Somebody would have found it.
Well, probably would have ended up in the water. Didn't it come from over the water? Or were they shooting right above the city the whole time?
They were shooting above a city. A town.
So the other problem with that is they picked it up on radar before and they picked it up moving. Like, you know, if it's windy enough, but I don't think a balloon's going to be moving that good.
Yeah, they give estimates between it. There were at points where they described its movement as sometimes it was too slow to be a plane and it was almost looked like it was hovering. And then other people said it was traveling somewhere between like at 200 miles per hour.
Crazy.
Balloons don't do that.
No.
You don't see balloons do that.
So I think like a balloon is, it's just funny. That's the first time they use that. And they use that excuse famously a few years later in Roswell.
Yeah.
Right.
So I just.
They probably figured it played well at that point. Like they're like, well, we did it back then.
Remember when we shot 1,400 shells at that fucking balloon? Let's say that we did that again. No big deal.
Exactly.
So balloons, ridiculous. Now, I had also read that people, they were actively trying to figure out if a blimp had got loose from somewhere, like the fucking Goodyear blimp or something had become untethered and was just floating. But at the same thing, like, man, if you're telling me a blimp can withstand even one anti-aircraft shell, why are we flying planes? Right? We should be in blimps. 100%. That is bogus. There's not a chance.
Yeah. There's a blimp. There's no way they would have been hammering it with anti-aircraft. It's not a Battlefield 1 blimp. That takes forever to put down. It's the regular. They're made of like what? Like a little bit of metal, like thin metal with a balloon under it. Like
highly explosive too.
Right.
It would be a fucking show when you started peppering that thing.
Oh yeah. Cause that was
like
a common...
just a matter of speed. Like it doesn't, the way that it moved, it was moving way too fast to be a blimps are slow as shit. Like they're so slow.
Yeah, you'd have to go even deeper. In order to say it was a like a blimp or a balloon, you'd have to like go into the weather and like, was the wind even blowing the right way for it to be coming that way?
Is he going to have a balloon? Yeah. How are you going to have a... There's no wind that moves something at like 100 miles per hour.
No, and there's the alleged path takes it inland, like swings it north, swings it around, and then swings it back out to the ocean. Yeah. Like you can look up the flight path of what this is, and it changes direction.
Yeah, it's like an intelligent flight path. It's not something that like a balloon just like comes all the way over the city and then decides to make a U-turn and then go all the way back.
Meanwhile, getting peppered by
hundreds and hundreds of shells
the whole time. Absolutely not. Absolutely just terrible.
Not can't be a blimp or a balloon. Just doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make sense.
It can't really
at
be
all.
A commercial aircraft because at times it was going too slow.
There's no wreckage. There's no wreckage.
No, and there's no wreckage of anything.
Right. I mean, people described, multiple witnesses described that the shells were hitting it. Like, so they were hitting it and doing no damage. And the best proof is that's the CBS report. That radio report is probably the best thing that we have in terms of like information, plus the photo, which we'll talk about. We can talk about in a second.
Let's talk about the CBS report a little bit.
Right.
What was that? What was that about again?
That was the actual radio report that they gave the next day from CBS Los Angeles to CBS New York. They said that there was an unidentified object had gone over the area of the Los Angeles. They say Los Angeles.
Angeles.
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
Los Angeles. I'm going to start calling it that. Hey, boys, we're going to come to AlienCon, Los Angeles.
We're going to be going
to Los Angeles this year.
But like a straight up report, just outlining the events that there was an object,
had reporters out there gather information, get witness testimonies and come in, and they put together a report. And they said there is definitely something up there and it was getting hit with the shells and was not causing any damage and didn't seem to be affecting it.
So let's the other quick thing I want to touch on before we get into the photo is the other theory is that they weren't shooting at anything. It was just panic. And everyone was just firing wildly, right? Well, I think that's horseshit because you can look up pictures of, like, there's the one famous picture of them. All the spotlights are on a target. They're all converging, right? But there's other pictures where you see these spotlights actively, they're actively all over the place, searching.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like, for you to say that there was absolutely nothing, there's nothing, they wouldn't all converge like that. They see something. Like someone sees something in one of those lights that alerts the other people controlling the lights.
And they all.
So they locked on to something. They saw it and all the lights locked onto it. Because there's a bunch of other pictures besides the famous one of
earlier,
the lights
before they start shooting.
Yeah, and there's the just lights were everywhere. Crisscrossing. Yeah, just going all over the place looking for something, and then. All those lights converged. It was like five or six lights, like converging on one object.
So I think if they were honestly firing at nothing, I don't think we would have this picture. I think we'd have pictures like the other ones you see where you just see lights kind of every which way, no rhyme or reason.
Yeah.
Not all on converging on a single point.
Yeah.
So I think to say there is nothing there is ludicrous from the photographic evidence we have.
Yeah, right. In the picture too, you can see like rounds exploding above it and around it.
Yeah,
so they're shooting that direction
too. The rounds would explode anyway. But I think the best evidence that something is actually there is there's like a grouping of three or four rounds that all explode together.
Yeah,
and it looks like it's probably in front of the craft or on, we don't know exactly where it is, but there's four of them like just grouped together. All the other ones are kind of different points of light, like around it, but you see like three or four, like they're a nice little group. And it's like, now, so that looks like they're hitting something. That to me looks like they're actually hitting something.
Well, and the other thing is too, let's talk about this photo now. There's a great lecture by David Marler. I'm not sure if Zell watched, but me and Dan watched it. We'll post a link somewhere. But I'm sure you can type it in David Marler, Battle of LA UFO Incident. And he has one of the original Associated Press.
Right. Like, he has the original photo. He has the original photo.
Yeah.
That he got from... it's a fun story. That he got the actual photo, the original photo, from eBay, from a person who found it at a yard sale. He has the original photo. Most of the photos that you'll see online are actually retouched.
Yeah.
And they were edited to, they're not like Photoshop because they didn't have Photoshop back then. But they kind of messed with the lighting and the contrast a bit to kind of make the lights look a little better, to make it print better in the newspaper.
Yeah.
And it was a common practice back then.
But still is.
The original one is a little bit different.
It's like putting a filter on a picture.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
It's the same picture, just looks a little better.
Right.
But I think that picture is some of the best evidence that there's something there because it shows... In his original picture, everything, the light isn't as bright, and you can see in that light, in the picture, when you're looking at it to the right, you can see other beams that are going off, but they're not directly lined up. So it's like they're actually if you follow the light, it's like it's bending off an object. Like it's hitting something and bending.
Or reflecting,
And then there's some lights where the light doesn't go through. So it's what that says in the picture is that it's the light's hitting something and not continuing. So there's not light where you would expect light if there's nothing. And you can only see that in the original photo, like in the original negative, when you start playing with that negative. And you can start to see, like in that bright cluster where they're all pointed on, there is a cluster of explosions and they're bright. But when you dim it, you can see an outline of what I can only describe as a disc object.
Right. The photos that are retouched, they kind of do a bad job at like outlining the ship, because when you see some of the explosions that are going on, they kind of merge into the top. So that gives it, a lot of people would say like, oh, it looks like your classic UFO. It's got the little turret on the top and it's got the little oval shape, but that little turret on the top is just another batch of explosions from the AA guns. In the original photo, you can actually see something that you can determine the density of light is better. Like you can tell what looks like an actual explosion from the AA guns. And then there's something else in there that, like Brayden says, it looks like a disc or an oval.
Yeah. Like whatever it is, it's probably reflective, right?
It's not even reflective, but even adaptive camouflage, any kind of thing like that. Cause even if you shine a light at something that has adaptive camouflage, like that light, it would still kind of cast a shadow unless it's completely bending the light around it.
Right.
So I don't know if it even, it's not invisible, but it, for all intents and purposes, it is. You shine that light on it, it might just be really reflective. It makes me think of the, that ship in Flight of the Navigator. You ever watch that movie?
No.
Flight of the Navigator. Is it Ben Savage? I can't remember. But it's got like a ship that's just like a big silvery oval, and it kind of changes shape, but it always stays like it has like a really reflective surface, and then it can kind of change into whatever. It's like the James Bond car, you know?
It just
reflects what's around it. And so it is kind of invisible, but then if you shine a light on it, it might still cast a shadow.
Hmm. So it's aliens.
Oh, dude, 100%. Well, man, we talked about this before. This is the height of great conflict in the world that we've never seen before. We're starting at have we started to develop nuclear weapons in 1942? No. I'm sure research has begun on it.
I don't think we started the Manhattan Project till later.
Well, research on the atom
they've
got to
have
there.
Something.
They just don't know the full benefits of, or like not benefits. But
I mean,
full
nuclear
experience.
Testing hadn't started yet. So I think that would be like the trigger for an extraterrestrial.
But even like this point of great conflict, then we're seeing some sort of like, you wouldn't convert the light. I'm just saying like that. This photo to me is the best evidence that there's something there. Like if you were like, if you look at like one of those movie lights, you know what I mean? Like sometimes they have them out when they open a new theater, like the big spotlight.
Yeah.
You wouldn't just converge all those lights on nothing. You can see, if a light is on something. That's what a light does.
Yeah.
So the fact that they're all pointing at an object and you're like, ah, they were shooting at nothing. You're like, no, motherfucker, they're all pointing at the same thing. And light isn't going past an object. That's how light works.
Yeah, there's something in there. And you look at the pictures and and they're definitely not, you know, it's just looking at the evidence of like the whole situation. It's like you have witnesses, you have radar. The thing showed up on radar. There was something there. And skeptics will point to the fact that American radar back then, the radars we were using were like first gen radars and they weren't great. And they had the actual West Coast defense capabilities had been assessed by like Army Command, and they were like, they felt that they were inadequate and that the radar that they were using was really old and it had some weird quirks to it. And sometimes it might show false signals and stuff like that. But even then, it's like three different radars confirmed something was there. Like, they didn't just pick it up on one radar. There were three different ones. There were two long-range ones and one short-range one, and they all showed something in the same position moving.
Yeah.
You have that. Something was there.
Has to be. Something was there.
And, yeah. I mean, California, that area of California does have a history of UFOs. I mean, as late as 2004, we still had Navy pilots encountering mysterious aircraft over there.
Well, there is
a video of at least one.
There's an alleged USO base over there too. People always see, like, you all hear accounts or claims of, like, UFOs leaving the water, like, or entering or leaving the water in that area.
Yeah, that's a thing.
It's been going on for a long time in the same area. So I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if this was the first. Well, this is obviously the first mass, like, encounter where thousands of people have seen it. But it
was the first real time. I mean, I've heard of reports of UFOs being over Los Angeles as early as or being identified over Los Angeles. But they couldn't tell what it is since the late 1800s.
Well, yeah. So there's accounts of UFOs throughout all human history as well. So,
but I think the point I'm trying to make is, like, that area, like, California is a hot spot.
Yeah.
Like, that is a place that that UFOs have turned up for consistently throughout history. And, well, whether there's something weird about it, you know, it just goes to show that it's like, there's more chance of it being a UFO than anything else.
That goes with the theory that, as Braden said, in times like in this great conflict of human conflict, if, like, ETs have been, or, like, UFOs have been witnessed for, like, all of recorded history, pretty much. Right. So if these ETs have been, like, monitoring our civilization, or, like, one of the theories is they're interdimensional, and what happens in our, like, existence, like, ripples through into theirs. So if we start, like, blowing each other up and killing people, like, that's one of the theories that it actually affects them. So that's why they keep, like, that's why they're here, kind of, I guess. So the theory with, like, mass conflict, if that's going on, they're here, like, kind of monitoring, because we're killing ourselves in the millions, right? Tens of millions. Over a short period of time. So I don't know. For me, this UFO is one of the coolest pieces of evidence of, like, an ET presence.
Well, the best part too is, like, after getting, you know, peppering it with shells and whatnot, all reports say it just kind of drifts leisurely toward Long Beach and then vanishes from view over the ocean. And most reports describe it as pale orange in color, and some say it was glowing a little bit, and so just weird. Like, just leisurely just drifts, right? So that's something, like, checking it out, right?
Yeah
I think my kind of theory is that at this point in human history, we hadn't had radar for very long. Like, there had been radars, kind of experiments with radars since, like, the 1920s, but we hadn't really been using it, like, all over the country to in, like, a focused way. Like, the basic radar that the U.S. Army used didn't enter service until the 1940s. So my theory is that perhaps this was the first time that we started actually picking these things up on radar, because they picked it up on radar first. If they wouldn't have picked it up on radar, they wouldn't have seen it.
They wouldn't have known it's coming.
They wouldn't have known it's coming. And perhaps the extraterrestrials hadn't really, if they were extraterrestrials, they didn't really consider us having radar. Maybe they thought we were too primitive for it, or they didn't know that we had it in development. And it was the fact that they were just flying too low and they didn't really consider it as a threat.
It can't be a weather balloon, because didn't you say weather balloons, most of them have beacons, so they'd pop up on radar?
Yeah, some of them have radio transponders, because they don't. Some of them don't show up on radar.
Small.
But because this one does and then doesn't, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It shows up, disappears, shows up closer, disappears, shows up closer.
Right. So if it were a weather balloon, it would have had to either going below radar, like the radar range, like the radar ceiling, like the radar floor. It would have had to either go below and then go back up, or it had to go above and then come back down. Which is not, like, that sounds nuts to me.
That's ridiculous.
I think it's, I mean, I would put weight behind mine to be like, they didn't know we had radar, or they didn't think about it. And then they were just like, you know, once they realized that, oh, wait, they're shooting at us. Let's get out of here. Not that they weren't worried about it, but they were more worried about like interfering. You know, maybe it's right. Their prime directive not to.
Yeah, direct, prime directive.
Yeah.
They can't interfere, or they just thought it was a bad idea. It was just, it's better for us just to get out of here than do anything, because it didn't cause any damage and didn't do anything. And it's just kind of, you know, they just didn't think like, what, they could see us? I think I kind of like that idea. The fact that maybe we just developed a little bit faster than they thought we were, or they didn't know that we had radar.
Yeah, could very well be. I'm here to check it out.
Maybe they had been flying over that area for the longest time and just never been detected. And then this was the first time we really picked stuff up on radar and was just like, oh,
you think if they've been flying here before, they would know that we could see. So they would try and stay like out of sight range, but they're pretty low.
Right. But like Brayden was saying, like when you look at the picture, you see an object outline, but you don't see like a clear object. It's not like something that looks like it's solid.
So you could have. Like,
I would think that it has some sort of maybe cloaking device or some sort of adaptive camouflage technology to kind of keep it invisible more or less.
Right.
Unless it's doing something. And then, but the radar picked it up. Like the radar picks up stuff because the radio comes back. And I don't know if they worry about stealth technology or something like that. I don't think they would have implemented it into their ships, because stealth technology is kind of, it's expensive. And it's just like, why would you have that if your ship could, you know, they'd have better technology to deal with that.
Yeah, I could get on board with that.
They just wouldn't think about it.
Yeah, the spotlights are just randomly searching, and then you don't necessarily see that, but yeah, it just reflects the light and then they all converge.
Right.
Yeah, like the light bends, like you hit it and then you can see it hitting something, the light bends, you're like, you would know you're on something.
Right, yeah. Hey. So like the radar like told them in the general area where it was. So then they started shooting, and then they started seeing that they hit something, and then all of the guns, either all the tracer rounds, that they all put them on that one spot, plus they put all the lights on that spot, and they couldn't exactly see what they were hitting, but they could see that they were hitting something.
Something, yeah. I could get on board with that 100%. Yeah, but to say there was nothing there is absolutely ludicrous.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I don't think you could say that there was nothing.
Like, you just look at the evidence of that one. The evidence all points to that there was something there. They were shooting at something. They were hitting something. I mean, you don't just fire 1,400 rounds randomly at a single point in the sky.
Yeah, for 30 minutes, like, you don't pound away at something for 30 minutes, realize you're not hitting anything.
And be like, all right, shit. Whoops.
Especially, it's just the radar. The radar picked up an object. It was one object, not a multiple object. So it's not like a 15 planes or whatever, but they picked up one object. So I would think that you wouldn't just go pounding away at just nothing in the air. Like, we're not hitting anything.
Man, it's cool, because if you go with the theory that like they came here to check us out because we're destroying ourselves. This was 1943, and then later, like the next year in the war in 44, you start getting the reports of the Foo Fighters, like those glowing orbs and stuff, and like the dogfights. And then a few years later that, you get Roswell. So it's like, if this was all part of the same type of like ET presence, this was like the first encounter. The military was like, oh, this is, we don't know what this is. That was like the first start, and then they slowly, you know, it kind of like slowly followed them through the war, and eventually, if you go with the story at Roswell, they either brought it down with some people say like some type of concentrated frequency disrupts their flight, or it malfunctioned and it crashed. And we did recover like an ET spacecraft. This kind of seems like the start of this, like the whole sequence of events of that time in my mind.
Yeah. We could have just been a little bit developing a little bit faster than we thought we were. I think that kind of makes sense, because then they just didn't think about that. That they thought we were more primitive than we actually were.
Yeah, and they made the big mistake by accidentally dropping crashing their craft. And we're like, we fucked up. We gave those hooligans All the technology they'd ever need.
Those goddamn monkeys.
Now they're building a space force. They're coming for us.
Now they're throwing their trash on Mars.
There
goes the neighborhood. Like,
the videos and stuff are absolutely fascinating. And the accounts and stuff, it's a really interesting case because they reported it in the LA Times. Like that picture was in the newspaper.
Yeah.
And it's just not talked about now. They're like, yeah, nah.
Yeah. In that great lecture by David Marler, he makes the good point where there has to be other photos of what was happening, but we just don't have them. You know, I don't know whether I don't think it's because they were necessarily covered up. I just think that some people had the pictures and just didn't think much of it at the time and just never, and they just kind of got lost because it was just like dumb luck that he found the original of this photo.
Yeah. I could totally see that because if you were like, you're the LA Times back in 43, everything's kept in paper records. Eventually, like you move offices, records get moved, lost, destroyed by accident. After like 40, 50 years, like to keep those kind of records and like, they're putting out news stories, you know, dozens a day. And this was a big one for the time, but they're like, oh, well the government said it's nothing, weather balloon. So what's the point of keeping the story?
Right. So they might've tossed them out or they just never kept the negatives or something. They just got locked up, you know, just
or
happened to be lost.
Or you go with the grand conspiracy that these major news publications have been in the pockets of the elite and they covered it up. It's got rid of it. They're like, no, we can't let anyone know about these UFOs. You go down a whole rabbit hole that way though. But I think this is one of the first times we've all agreed, like this one was something.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
It was something.
It's something. It's totally weird. And it sucks we don't have more information and there's not a lot. Most of the eyewitnesses are deceased at this point, and you don't have any real reliable information that you can get about this. There's just the memos and the things like that. Nothing was recovered. You know, it's just a bummer. You just have to get that one picture, but even that one picture gives you something, and you have the eyewitness reports and you have the radar stuff. I think it's the best evidence for something was there.
It's got to be. Especially with the picture. Even though the picture's like been, the contrast has been changed, you can definitely see like they're fixating on something, and it just, man, it's so cool. Aliens! Whoop, whoop!
Oh, 100%. 100% aliens. All right, cool. Well, we've pretty much gone into our time on that one. It's really good. If you haven't checked it out, or if you've for some reason been living under a rock, you've never heard of it, go watch some documentaries on it. We talked about that.
Don't watch that movie, Battle of Los Angeles. It sucks.
No, it sucks.
I'll post the links we talked about in the notes of the episode. So on your podcast player, just scroll down, you'll see them.
Let's get to some podcast reviews, 5-star reviews.
New reviews?
Better than a duck-billed yowie. 5-star review.
That's awesome. That's really good.
From
that's a great review.
El Nobby from Australia.
Yeah.
G'day from Oz. These guys rock. Listening once is awesome. Then getting meat draw drunk and listening again is even better. When's the Australian drinking tour? P.S. Life finds a way. That was my best Aussie accent. How was it?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
You can.
Pass.
You can judge Braden's accent on your own time. Let us know.
Pure ear candy. 5-star from 1Y7 from UK. Awesome. I look forward to listening to these guys each week. By far the best conspiracy podcast available.
Oh, yeah.
That's, nice. That's all I got for new 5-star reviews.
Yeah, that's all we got.
But we do have some new Patreon supporters.
Oh, yeah.
Nolan Hansen, my boy Cody, Tim, Jackie Rice, Connor Wright. Sometimes it does this weird thing where it like repeats everyone. Alex Van Slyke, Justin Leach. And I think I've done all these other ones.
Sounds about right.
So thanks, guys. Make our dreams come true. It all helps. We've got tons of content. We've got tons of content in the bank. Tons of stuff coming to you guys.
We got so much content that I can't keep up. I can't keep up editing. These guys are machines.
Ooh, it's a good problem. It's a good problem machines. To have. That's what happens when you got the gruesome twosome running wild on weeknights and Saturday mornings. Cartoons and conspiracies. Yep.
All right.
So,
I got
yeah, if you like what we do, get on Patreon. We almost have an entire another podcast on our Patreon feed, ATT Confidential. It's just stuff just for Patreon listeners. Get on there. Why? We got give it a try.
Extra stuff. We got our Discord server up. If you're a Patreon, you can hop into our Discord server, chat with other fans and stuff. People seem to like to do that.
It's been fun. I like going on there every now and then.
I got episode one of Chronic Conspiracies dropping on Patreon pretty soon. You make a surprise appearance, but the rule is you pretty much have to get really stoned before you record. So the topics go endless and in all directions, and they don't make any sense. But it's fun. Well, you let me know if it's fun to listen to. We'll see.
All right. Anything else we got to plug?
Yeah.
Oh, Zell's Prolapse of the Week.
Prolapse of the Week. This guy, KJ006 from Patreon, bought us a round of beers. More than a round. I'm not going to tell the amount, but more than needed. So for that, we'll be having 6 rounds each.
Oh,
$2 tall cans on the strip in Vegas.
Woo! Nice.
Yeah.
Even though we have already got back from Vegas while you're listening to this, but
yeah,
you get the point.
And we will do a special dance for you on our Instagram to our Vegas official theme song we've just picked out.
Damn right. Yep. All right, and I got last thing, new track of the week. This is from a band called The Linden Method, Linden. It's called Desensitivity, and it's a sweet like rock, punk rock track. And you can find them on Spotify to search for The Linden Method. I'm going to plug it in here at the end of the episode. So if you want to have your song featured on Alien Theorist Theorizing, email us, alientheorist@gmail.com. Send me a link or a download link or a MP3 file, WAV file, whatever you can. Doesn't matter. We'll put it in there. That's it for me.
All right. Well, as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies. There's a junkie on the exit ramp, begging for some change. There's a mother with her child lying cold under the train. There's a million people starving, I don't know a single name. I get into my SUV and think about my elbow feeling strange. Desensitivity.
life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry because this bundle won't last. Save now at CedarPoint.com.